just 5 o'clock. Director McVicker had an unavoidable conflict arise and may join us when as the meeting is in progress. So, hi, Sean. So, as vice chair, I'll call the meeting to order at 5 p.m. And we are holding this meeting via video conference. This is the April 12th, 2022 PCJWSA Board of Directors business meeting. So, first order of business is to take the roll. Tom Donahue.
Here.
Sean Carlton.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
And as I indicated, Director McVicker may be joining us as the meeting is in progress. So item three on the agenda is the minutes from the March 8th, 2022 business meeting. Do we have any questions or comments on those meeting minutes?
I move that we accept the minutes of the March 8th business meeting.
I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to approve the meeting, the March 8th, 2022 business meeting minutes. All those in favor, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. So, okay, good. Item four, financial reports. 4A, accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st, 2022. Do we have any questions on the accounts payable? Cameron?
Yeah. I've got page one, card services, radios. What are we doing, replacing some radios?
John, do you want to take that one? Those are the handheld radios.
Yeah, we are participating. Well, we were solicited to participate and agreed to a tsunami communication drill that is being spearheaded by the South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteers Corps. And one of the requirements for us to participate in that drill was we needed to have some handheld radios. These are GMRS radios. They were fairly modest in price. I think they were maybe $80 a piece. And we've got three of them because when we participate in that drill, we're going to want somebody with one of these radios at Horn Creek, somebody with one of these radios here at the treatment plant in the offices, and we want somebody up at the 600K Reservoir, which is the highest location in our service boundary, and those radios are to participate in that countywide drill. And the one that's scheduled in June, I can't remember the exact date, but it'll also allow us to participate in future drills. The point of this effort is for post disaster recovery, and communications are going to be a big factor in the success of that, and we want to be sure that we're part of that and a useful part of that if the time comes.
John, do those radios work pretty well with the reception there at Horn Creek with all the points that you're, I mean, have you tried them out in all the areas so you're...
We haven't tried them out in all the areas. We've tried them here. Being the GMRS radios, you know, they don't have a huge range. I want to say probably, you know, the best to expect would probably be 5 miles. But the idea is that we kind of create the spider web of communication hubs that we may not be able to reach Tillamook, but we can reach somebody who can reach somebody who can reach Tillamook.
Right. So
and,
the,
yeah.
up on top would probably be a repeater-like type thing. But so I'd be interesting to see how a test run would work out and stuff prior to all that.
Yeah, I think it'll work out fine, but we fully intend to do so.
Okay.
Cameron, you had another question?
Yeah, I've got a couple. You bet. Okay, we got dinged $25 for a late fee. What was that on? Page one.
That is because we cannot rely on USPS to get our payment back to the processing center on time.
So is that like the credit card?
It is for the credit card. So because we only do AP twice a month now, sometimes the due date doesn't line up either. So I can't always guarantee that it's going to be there on the day that they want it to be there.
How about going to a call in on a phone number and doing a credit card number over the phone?
Pay a credit card with a credit card? I only have one credit card.
Oh. Okay. All right. Next, page two.
Okay.
Global network services, monthly workstation server management.
There are IT people, and we pay them monthly to back up our servers.
All right. Hatch Chemical Company, Horncrete. What is pH probe?
It's a piece of equipment that tests pH, and we needed a new one.
So where
I believe. Yeah.
Okay. Page three. We belong to the Pacific City Chamber, correct?
We do.
$150.
Yeah.
Tom, do you go to those meetings every month or whenever they have those to give updates?
No, I haven't. I do believe I was invited to one meeting and spoke at one meeting in the recent past, but I haven't been to one recently, no.
Wouldn't that be helpful, like in our community outreach program, to get stuff out there?
It could well be. I'm looking to become more active in those areas, but and I'm sure once I get settled in,
you're just busy. I know you're just cranking off, especially with all this paperwork.
Sure. Well, I think my presence, in the community amongst these different organizations, I think would be beneficial. And
are people getting to know you? That you're out and about.
As much as I can, yes.
We don't have an Idaho plate or a California or Washington plate, so that's a good thing.
So, Cameron, do you have any other questions on the accounts payable?
No, I got that. I think Tom's got a couple of them.
Okay.
We know he's
Tom, you had your hand up.
Okay, the 15th, there was a check issued to Owens Pump and Equipment for a lift station pump repair. Which lift station was that?
I'm not 100%. I think it's a spare. Go ahead, Leonard.
It was like $3,000 and change, so okay. The other question I had is for the shop addition for $9,000, was that to reconfigure the shop without the generators per se, or what was...
No.
What was the addition?
It's an addition to the shop out in Beaver. It covers the mower and I think that and equipment out there. But it's like a lean-to kind of thing.
Did the mower deck get covered up out there now?
It is now.
Okay.
Is there a way to secure it? Or is like you say, is it just a lean-to?
You want me to take this?
Go ahead, I haven't been out there.
It's a lean-to for the mower deck. The mower deck would not fit inside the building with all the implements we have, so we had to build a lean-to because it was just, even though we covered it with a tarp every year, it was just getting degraded faster than we could keep up.
Thank you, Leonard.
Yep.
That's all I had. And
okay. Any other questions? Yeah, Sean?
Sorry, yeah, just one. The on page four, the almost 14 Ground Industrial Software Solutions. Is that, that's our SCADA stuff, right? And so is that an annual fee that we pay?
No, it's this is to do the SCADA upgrade. It's the SCADA upgrade to a new version. It is the replacement of our obsolete alarm notification software out at Horn Creek, and it's also the addition of a perpetual historian database out at Horn Creek, which is a database that records all our critical water quality information and logs it perpetually. We've never had anything like that. I felt it was important to get it. So once this is installed, it'll track all these key these KPIs, these key performance indicators on the performance of the plant perpetually, which means 5 years, 10 years. If we want to know what the chlorine residual was at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, that will be perpetually recorded. And so it's the upgrade of one piece of software and the replacement of a second piece of software, which is the alarm notification, and the installation of a brand new software, which is that perpetual data historian.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Hearing no other questions, do we have a motion to approve the accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st of this year?
I so move.
I second.
So it's been moved and seconded to approve the accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st of 2022. All those in favor, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Then on the next item would be the fiscal year report for 21-22. Do we have any questions on that? Tom?
I just have a comment. Is in reference to the new trailer purchase, and I'll just hold that question and refer back to it when we get to that on the agenda.
That'd be great. Thank you. Any other questions on the fiscal year report? Okay. We'll move on to the manager's report, item 5. Oh, Sean, did you have a question?
I did. Sorry, I was having to try to open a couple windows and look at my notes. I just had a question, and I can't remember why there's a difference, but there's a pretty – what was the page 7005 fund? There's $200,000 in there for engineering. I know part of that is master plans, but that doesn't – that seems like more than what I remember was going to be allocated to master plans. What else was in there?
It's not just master plans, also the water conservation and management plan.
Right.
I want to say there was another.
Wasn't there three?
There was another thing in there, and I'm losing it. It's not on the top of my head.
It's the water and wastewater master plan, the conservation plan, and I think that was it, wasn't it? Unless it was for some just miscellaneous engineering support.
There was the Ridge Road project Tillamook County has been working on, but we got reimbursed for it, so it kind of it cancels itself out.
Wasn't it the Horn Creek line, that upgrade on that, wasn't it?
I don't know that we've done anything with that yet.
Oh, okay.
Fiber optics, that hasn't been run yet.
Right.
Oh, it is run, but that wasn't under engineering.
Oh.
Okay.
That it?
Thank you.
So now we can move on to the manager's report. John?
Thank you. Just a couple of highlights after a pretty rough February on the COVID front. I'm happy to report that March was very quiet, and certainly hope that continues. I think indicators are moving us in the right direction. And outside of the lifting of the statewide mask mandate, which I believe happened on March 12th, really nothing new to report on in terms of COVID-19. We had no issues with COVID-19 in March, and are thankful for that. Just touching on a few other highlights, I know we're all anxious to dive into the water rights issue. I'm planning to position myself to be able to talk to the board in a meaningful way about that at the very next board meeting. It's taken a while to pull everything together, including our options and the costs and the benefits associated with each option, and some of it's just my understanding of Oregon water rights law too, and I've been wanting to make sure that I'm in a good position to discuss that and provide any recommendations to the board that I might have related to that.
John, aren't you on vacation next month? Won't that be the next following month?
We're hoping to move the board meeting up a week to the 3rd so that I can participate.
Okay.
Yes. And I know that some of you have spoke up in terms of that working. Others I haven't heard from yet, but that's what we'd like to try to do. And if that works for everybody, we'll plan to have next month's meeting be on the first Tuesday instead of the second Tuesday, and which isn't that big of a change for us. We're on the first Tuesday for a long time, I think. So,
but it worked for me.
Yeah.
Let's see the SCADA upgrades at Horn Creek. We are all lined up for that. That was related to one of the questions I answered earlier in the meeting. The technician will be on site. He'll be here almost two full weeks. He'll be here on, I believe, May 2nd, which is the first Monday in May, and we'll be getting that work done. It'll be good to get that work done in conjunction with the fiber optic work done. I feel like we'll have made some really good progress in both those areas. The unaccounted for water issues that we've talked about, we had repaired three water leaks in March. One of them was significant, and it was pretty obvious that one of them had been present for quite some time. It was on a remote water line, but it was certainly on a water line that was hard to see from the road and actually quite hard to even walk physically. But we found that leak. And we're going to be walking these remote water lines several times a year going forward, because we could experience a significant leak there, and it could run over a hillside down into a little draw or gully, and we'd really never know that there was a water leak in the area unless we physically walk those lines, and we're going to make sure we do that.
How many lines are remote on an area?
Well, Leonard could probably answer that better, but I'm guessing that you could probably point to a dozen or more specific areas in town. I mean, we're not a big service area, so I'm not talking about that goes dives off into the forest for miles and miles. But it's amazing that just the placement of these lines in these little wooded lots and stuff, unless you're right on top of it, you often don't know you have an issue. And so we're going to, make sure that we walk these lines and, just keep an eye out and an ear out for any potential water leaks. We aren't really expecting any more, but we want to be sure that if something happens that we catch it as quickly as we can.
John, did you pick up that new equipment that you mentioned to us a month or so ago? You already received that?
We did receive it. We tested it. And it's a very reputable line of equipment, the best on the market that's been in use for years. And we believe we got a lemon out of the box because we could not get it to detect a known water leak when we were right on top of it. We could not hear it through the equipment. So I've got a return authorization. We're going to send that back and get and replace it with this exact same equipment, which, you know, I've got no lack of confidence in the brand and the manufacturer and the equipment. It's just anything electronic, you know, Murphy's Law. And I think that I think we got something that was defective right out of the box. So I've got a return authorization. We're sending it back. I've got a replacement coming. And then we will be utilizing that equipment to its fullest.
All right. Any other questions for John on the manager's report? Okay, the next item on the agenda is item 6, unfinished business. 6A, water and wastewater master plant.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to report that we now have what we construe to be the final water master plan. You know, based off of our review comments and so forth, took a while for them to turn this around. One reason it did is because you all may recall that we had changed our list of priorities and didn't realize it until late that by doing so, the list of priorities needed to also change accordingly on our third-party SDC analysis that was done. And that was done by an organization that Parametrics had hired to perform that part of the plan. They set that part of the plan out because it requires some expertise in those areas. And, you know, I think they put together a decent SDC analysis for it. But when we changed our list of priorities, we then had to go back and change the list of priorities in that part of the plan, and that required reaching out to that sub and asking them to go back in and do some revisions to it. I did not catch that part of that discrepancy until fairly late in the game, but I'm glad to see that we do have what we believe is the final version of the Water Master Plan. It has been sent off to the Oregon Health Authority for their review and approval. I'm not expecting any significant questions or revisions. It's always possible. But we'll have to wait to get their approval before we can really say this truly is indeed our final water master plan. But we believe largely our work's done, Parametrics' work's done. We just have to get through the state review process on it, and I think that we'll get through it without significant issue. And the wastewater master plan, I know that they've been calibrating that model. We've got what I think will probably be the last request of information that was asked of us by Parametrics. We've got those numbers compiled, and we're going to send them in. Parametrics has said we're going to see the draft of this wastewater plan very, very soon. Just on a side note, I want to mention that I think we would have probably had both of these further along by now, if not for the next item on the list on the agenda, which is the Water Management and Conservation Plan, which had a much sooner and much more rigid deadline than our master plans did. So I know that a lot of attention had to focus over to that plan just for us to meet our aggressive timeline for getting it submitted, but we did. I'm jumping ahead now. It just flowed out of me, Anne. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think it needs to be said we appreciate your diligence and your quick attention to that.
John?
Yes, Cameron?
how much of this stuff will change for our budget for next year with getting all this done? I mean, and I'm sure you're going to probably wind up budgeting for the change, you know, the ones that we're going to start off from the get-go, and along with other items that are going to be. So will this help? I mean,
having the plan finalized will definitely help. To be honest, when it comes to the plan, I don't need the plan to tell me what a lot of my priorities are, just because I already know. But certainly, we're going to begin chipping away at this, starting with the priorities we've identified as being the most critical. And it's a 20-year plan, so it's important to note that the schedule, the idea, the concept is to, let's try to prioritize these and get to the end of the list at the end of the 20-year period. So it's an evolution, and things will come up in the meantime, I'm sure, right? I think that we have the resources and references we need to begin to piece together our budgets over the next few years.
Okay. Thank you.
So did you have any other comments on the water management and conservation plan, John?
Yeah, maybe just to state something similar as I did to the water master plan. We have submitted it on time. It is now, like the water master plan, under review. This time it's not the Oregon Health Authority. This time it's the Oregon Water Resources Department. Again, I don't think that they'll have many questions or comments. If they do, we'll incorporate those. But this plan, in our view, is finished, and we just have to make it through this final regulatory review process to know that for sure. But I think here in the last month, I think we've largely, except for these final approvals, knocked out 2 out of 3 of our plans, which is Bell Hall, but we're finally there. And I would expect to see the wastewater master plan even more quicker now, because now Parametrics isn't tied down with 2 other plans.
That's great. Thank you. Item 6C, the SBAO best... Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. Yes.
John, on the conservation plan, I believe I saw a draft at one time. I don't think what you submitted, and my concern was the unbilled water, and I know it's been a headache for you and you've been working at it, but how did you address that in the plan that we submitted?
Well, I think largely what we did was we just doubled down on some water conservation measures that, you know, we've committed to on our last plan, and quite frankly didn't maybe live up to as well as we should have. And so what we've done is we've just doubled down on those commitments, and we intend to honor those commitments because it's important. I think it'll help us solve these unaccounted for water numbers that we've seen. And I do believe I did send the final copy out to everybody, Tom. So check your email. I think you will see the same copy that we sent to the state.
Okay, I'll look for it again. If I can't find it, I'll give you a buzz and ask you to resend it to me. Thank you.
And I'll get a hard copy from you.
I believe you already did. Am I wrong, Rochelle? Did we forget about that?
No, well, I'm positive we sent one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did, Cameron. But check your records, and if we need to get you one, we sure will.
All right, thank you.
So, item 6C, the SDAO Best Practices Insurance Program.
Yeah, Rochelle, if you want to just summarize the, what is it, the last 4% of credit that we can get, and then we'll talk about maybe if we've made any gains in those areas.
So, essentially, I sent everybody an email the day after the last board meeting on March 9th, just to let you guys know what we needed. 2% of it would just be the board members, all five board members, participating in a training. I sent two videos that would be very easy for everyone to watch. It doesn't even come with a certificate. So if you guys want to watch those, that would be great. And then we can check off that 2%. The other 2% that we would need to complete our full 10% would be two board members enrolling in the SDAO Leadership Board Academy. There is actually three levels to that academy, a bronze, a silver, and a gold, I believe. And they're not super difficult like the one that I participated in, because it only had one level and you just had to do the whole shebang. So if you only committed to the bronze level, which I sent in a in the email as well, the worksheet, I think it was only 6 hours of credit. And some of those were webinars that you could watch and participate in and receive certificates for. But obviously the authority will also pay for you to go to the training if you so choose. But obviously it's up to the board whether or not you want to participate in the Leadership Academy.
So just to clarify, we need mm-hmm. 2 out of the 5 board members to make that commitment. Is
correct.
That correct?
Yes.
Okay. John, did you have a comment?
Well, I just wanted to confirm with Rochelle. I think probably the first 2% is the low-hanging fruit, right?
That would be the easiest one for everybody to participate in. And I mean, we still have through November to complete that, but I think it would be super easy for everyone to just watch the video if you want.
And 2% would equate mm-hmm. to approximately how much?
The full 10% is going to give us about $6,500. So it, my mental math isn't working, but it's going to be over $1,000.
and so the last 2% seems like mm-hmm. the bigger commitment
it
from
is
at
a,
least two board members.
It's a much bigger commitment. Just,
mm-hmm. It would maybe, it would be great if maybe we could get the first 2% and get that under our belts, and then we'll see if the board members feel as though they've got the additional time for the larger commitment. But it sounds like the first 2% would be really easy for everybody, and mm-hmm. and it would be, it definitely would help in terms of mm-hmm. credit. Mm-hmm. And so forth. So,
yeah.
Cameron,
Rochelle. So, could we come in? Like, could we come into the office and watch that video or whatever there?
It's a hyperlink. So, if you want to use it on your laptop and do it from home, you can do that. I can bring my laptop in, and you could watch it in the conference room. But it's not like an actual DVD or anything.
Oh, okay. And
you just click on the link, and it, mm-hmm. and then it's like a YouTube kind of video thing.
Yeah,
it's got a play arrow in the middle of it, and you mm-hmm. just click on that play arrow, and it starts going.
Right. I'd be interested. I'd go take a class for the part. Find mm-hmm. somebody else. Go do a class wherever.
Yeah. Well, that would be great. Yeah.
I'd be willing to.
I'll look at some of those and see if there's any coming up.
Okay.
So the two of you will be talking about that going forward then. Okay. Thank you. Good deal, Cameron. Okay, any other questions or issues surrounding that? SDAO best practices. No? Moving on then to item 7, new business. 7A, strategic plan revisions.
Well, I would... I'm not a board member, but I would move that we table that particular line item until Carolyn can join us. I know that she was wanting to put it on the agenda and talk about it. It's a board issue. If there's no objection, I think this is one item that under the circumstances would be best to save for the next meeting if we can. But I would just say that much about it. As I say, it's a board thing.
Tom?
I looked at the document again, and really about the only thing I could see that we need to talk about is to just update things. Like, there's quite a bit of talk about an assistant manager, and, you know, it's just like more housekeeping than anything else. But I agree with John. Carolyn should be here to discuss it. But that's the only thing. It just looks like housekeeping stuff to me mostly.
So maybe we could use our time best by everybody has the document in this set of the meeting agenda. Maybe if we could all of us have a commitment to just read that really thoroughly and make any notes on paper for that discussion in May, that might be the best use of our time and produce a more effective conversation when the time comes. So everybody, is that sound reasonable? Sean, did you have your hand up too?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure to put a plug out there for the community outreach plan, especially as we lead into the next discussion, or the next one after that, I can't remember which way it is on the agenda, about in-person meetings. I think as we start coming back into that phase of getting back into in-person meetings, this is a really good time to start re-implementing that community outreach plan.
And theoretically, on that same note, we'll be having our wastewater master plan completed at some point in the not too distant future. And we had discussed a long time ago having a public meeting to maybe at the community center or some large venue to be able to go through those master plans and answer any questions that people in the public might have. So that would work out well with that too. So. Okay. Item 7B, the Dune Well fence contract.
We're ready to pursue this particular project. We've got three bids for it. This is related to the commitments we've made as part of our 25-year recreation and public purposes lease for the BLM property tract that is immediately to the north of our offices. One of our obligations there was to construct a dune well fence. This is a fence that will be a single fence that will delineate a 100-foot setback around each of our wellheads. Recently, I had it surveyed and staked that setback, and we are now ready to move forward with the fence installation. As we talked about a couple of meetings ago, there's a Resolution 21-03 has established a local contract review board. Something like this would need to come before that local contract review board. And as you all know, that board is the same as the PCJ Board of Directors. So I am bringing this to the board. We have three quotes for a split rail cedar fence, which is the type of fence that was identified in our recreation plan that was associated with our stewardship of the BLM land. And we've got, as you can see, we've got three quotes, one of them quite higher than the others. Our personal preference for this particular contract is to award this to the low bidder, which is Outdoor Fence Company. They're the same fence company that put up our new fence around the 100K Reservoir. They did a very good job with that fence. I've heard very positive feedback from the staff that worked with them on that project, and they have been very responsive in their interest in this project. And not only that, but they're by no small margin the lowest bidder, and I have every confidence in their ability to do the job and to do it well. So I would seek a motion from the board to accept this contract, and I think that's the way it works. And Anne, I'll let you take it from there.
So, Tom?
Yes, I looked at this pretty closely, and I agree the low bid is very a lot lower than everybody else, but I did notice a difference in the Bros and Hoes proposal, in that they were going to put a 14-foot galvanized gate, and the other two companies were going to use a vinyl type gate and only 12 inches. I think a galvanized gate would last longer and it's sturdier. However, the difference between the low bid and Bros and Hoes is about $14,000, which is a lot. But I think we ought to change the Outdoor Fence Company's bid to ask them to use a galvanized gate and provide, well, it's a split rail fence, so we're not talking about a great amount of security in the first place. But I think it would look better and would last longer than a vinyl 12-foot gate. Now, Bros had offered a 14-foot gate, and they also were going to work around any obstructions along the right of way that, well, maybe that's the incorrect term, where the fence would go. And the other company said that was up to us to for any shrubbery trimming, that sort of thing. So I would suggest that the low bid is a great idea, but to change it a little bit to incorporate a galvanized gate and excuse me, to see if we could get a 12-foot galvanized gate instead of a 14, and I don't think it would cost a heck of a lot more than their current bid. If it's $1,000 more, we're still well within the ballpark, and we would save money and add, you know, a minor amount of security, but it would last a lot longer in vinyl, I think.
Yeah, you may well be right, and we'll take a look at that. I did notice, I'm getting some feedback here for some reason. I did notice that the difference on the gate materials with the one quote versus the other two, I didn't make it, I didn't stress over it too much because I know it wouldn't have made up the difference between one contractor's quote and another. But I will say this, that, and a little bit of background information, is the intent before the fence installation begins, is that now that we've got the setback delineated and marked, the next step is to hire a company, a landscaping company, to come in and to clear the brush and to prune the trees to build a corridor around that perimeter, because I think that's going to be the best way to do it, because if you hire a fence company to start clearing brush, it's probably going to get expensive real fast. So the idea is now that we got it staked, we're going to hire a company to come in and clear the brush, to prune the trees. I told them to stop short of cutting any trees down. I mean, if there's a tree right in the middle of the linear distance, or a linear point on the fence, we'll jog around that tree, and we already know we're going to do that. But all of the contractors will stick to the marked perimeter, except where a tree is in the way, and then they will jog around it. In most cases, all we're going to have to do is to prune some limbs, lower limbs off these trees to enable the fence to go through. And as I say, our plan is to hire a separate contract that specializes, a contractor that specializes in that, to come and to clear that fence line first. That way, when the fence company shows up, they're ready to just start putting in fence posts.
John?
So,
I don't have the bros and hoes bid, but they do clearing of stuff where they do have the equipment to do that. I don't know if the board members are opposed to, but could we get maybe bros and hoes to do the clearing of it, or do we have to go through the bidding process again?
No, I've already got a quote from bros and hoes for just that part of the job.
Okay.
And they came in at a very reasonable price.
I'm all in favor of that. You know, I like to keep things local and keep it. And so, I'm in favor of outdoor fence. Let's tweak it, like Tom said, for the galvanized gate, you know, especially here at the coast, and go that way. So,
John, could I ask you what your feeling is on the choice between a galvanized gate and a vinyl gate? For the purpose that it serves, it's basically to stop or to provide an area that you can open so vehicles can go in if necessary. It's not actually going to be used that much. I saw the difference in the bids. To me, it didn't make a great deal of difference, and I'm guessing that a vinyl gate is less expensive. And I've seen a lot of vinyl fencing down here that's lasted quite a long time. The major problem I see with it is that it grows green things on it, so it might need to be washed every once in a while if we're particular about how it looks. But to me personally, it didn't bother me that it was a vinyl gate. But how do you feel about the two?
Well, I think we can take a closer look at both options. I'm guessing that a galvanized gate versus a vinyl gate may impact the final price by maybe a few hundred dollars. I think it'll be probably such a small impact that, I'll take a look at it, and the feedback I've gotten here is very valuable. And I think we can certainly, change plans and go with a galvanized gate. I don't see any reason not to do it. And as I say, it's if it does increase the total price, it's only going to do so by maybe, a few hundred dollars.
So if we had a motion, as it's been suggested, to accept the bid from Outdoor Fence and ask them to install a galvanized gate and approved an amount not to exceed, for example, $45,000, that would give us the flexibility for you to make that final decision on which option you felt was more appropriate?
Yeah, I think so. And if we wanted to play it safe, maybe we say not to exceed $46,000, but I don't think it's going to be that big of a difference in price.
Okay.
But we'll certainly give that other type of gate full consideration.
But we wouldn't spend that extra allotted money unless we needed to, so
sure.
So that might be a good way to go. Sean, did you have any thoughts on the subject?
I do have a couple of things. first of all, I apologize to Tom if my mic was on when you were talking, because I laugh every time I hear the word shrubbery. I think of Monty Python, so I apologize if you might pick that up. I know the fence is a requirement of the Oregon drinking water program, and I don't know what the reasoning behind that is, but is a split rail fence going to satisfy that requirement from the drinking water program? I mean, is that a security issue that they have? And if so, does the split rail fence cover that? Or?
Well, my understanding is there is no reg that requires us to delineate the setback with a fence of any kind. What the regs say is that we either have to own up to up to 100-foot setback, or we have to have control of that setback around those wellheads. And control could mean we just have a right-of-way or something. And we already have those things. So this fence is not going in because we're required to put a fence in. And, if there was a requirement to put a fence in, I'm pretty sure a cedar split rail fence would not meet the intent of that anyway.
But this fence is to satisfy the BLM recreational purposes lease, not the Oregon Water Department.
That's exactly correct.
So it's not intended to be security. We have security already provided for those wells.
Okay, thanks. And then I had a question, and it's a pretty minor comment, but there were the bid. Sorry, I got a lot of windows open. the bid between the outdoor fence was for 2422 linear feet, and the bid for the other one was for 2345 linear feet. So I just want to make sure we're on page for what the actual footage is.
Yes, and I'm looking for that now. Well, the linear feet of fence, of course, you can deduct the length of a gauge off of this, is 2,346. If the bid from the outdoor fence company undershot that, I didn't notice. No, not sure why.
Because no, they overshot it by a little bit.
They overshot.
They had 2422.
Okay. Yeah, and it won't take that much. It'll, like I said, I had it surveyed. One reason I had it surveyed is so I would have an accurate linear distance to approach fence companies with to get quotes.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Cool. Cameron, I think you were first, and then Tom.
Yeah, I would prefer a galvanized gate versus the vinyl. With the UV rays and stuff over time, those fences break down, they'll break and brittle, and we'll have plastic throughout there, where it's the galvanizes last quite a bit longer time. I'm not a big fan of the vinyl. When, like Ann says, they turn green and wood just turns dark. I don't have to power wash.
Well, we can certainly go that route. I don't think it would, certainly wouldn't hurt anything, and it may be a more durable material in this climate.
So, Tom?
I think the discrepancy, or a possible reason for the discrepancy in the lineal feet, is in one or two places where you're going to make a jog, that might take that up. Other than that, at this time, I think I'd like to make a motion to accept the bid with an addendum for outdoor fence after you've made this decision, John, for a galvanized gate or a vinyl gate, not to exceed $46,000.
Okay, it's been moved that we accept the outdoor fence bid for an amount not to exceed $46,000. Is there a second?
I second.
And Cameron will second. So it's been moved and seconded to award the outdoor fence company the contract to build the gate on the BLM land for an amount not to exceed $46,000. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. So the next item, 7C, is the Vector Jetter trailer purchase. John?
Yes, and one thing that's not entirely clear to me is, we mentioned the local contract review board. If we enter into a contract with a contractor, I would pretty clearly call that a contract. Is the purchase of a good or an item considered that as well? It's expensive enough, the cost for a Vector Jetter trailer is high enough. I think there's no doubt I got to come to the board for this, but I guess I would call a purchase like this a contract as well, right? So that's why I'm bringing it before the board. This is a piece of equipment that would allow us to do our job much faster and much more efficiently, and in some regards, more safely as well. We've submitted three quotes for this. I will say that there's only two that have all the features we want. The third is the closest we could come as a comparable to the other two. So of the quotes that we have here, we have a $135,000 roughly quote for a Vector trailer that's made by Ditch Witch, which is a good brand. But I will say this lowest quote is the one that doesn't have all the features that we're wanting. We're wanting a Vector and a Jetter unit. The Jetter will allow us to clean sewer lines. The Vector, well, in a sense, will allow us to clean sewer lines, but in a completely different way, and we won't be able to reach as far. And we're really talking about, we're talking about sewer lines, pipelines, where a Vector truck will come in handy for sucking out our sewage lift station wet wells, or for a step system septic tank, things of that nature. I will say that this equipment, although people generally, when they hear the term Vector truck or trailer, they're generally thinking about something that is predominantly used on the sewer side of things. This system will be much more versatile for us. These Vector Jetter units will help us with excavations for water leaks and all kinds of things. We can use water spray and the power of the Vector truck to expose water lines without the risk of potentially damaging them by trying to reach them with a backhoe and other things. It will allow us to excavate water leaks quicker and easier and safer than putting employees in the ditch with shovels and asking them to hand dig it. This is something that I believe has been on our wish list for quite some time. And I think the time is right to make this purchase, especially as we're embarking on these acoustic water leak detection programs. Our intent is we're going to find water leaks, and we're going to be repairing water leaks a lot in the future, just for, you know, leaks of all kinds, but primarily leaks that we don't currently know are there. We know we've got water leaks in our system. It's just once we find them, something like this is going to help tremendously for that. So the quote by Ditch Witch, although it is the least expensive, it does not have the jetter function. And we really feel like we need that, especially if we're only looking at a difference of $20,000 or $30,000, by going with somebody else who does offer that option. So we've got a second quote by Vermeer for around $157,000. And then we've got one by Dynavac for $193,000. The quote by the product that Vermeer sells and the product that Dynavac sells are the only two combination vector jetter trailer mounted units that we were able to find. And we looked pretty hard. We have budgeted for this. I will say that our preference is to not go with the low bid here because it doesn't have the jetter function. Our preference is not to go with the Dynavac because not only are they the higher bid, but they're substantially the higher bid. Our preference is to go for the Vermeer unit, which is a very high quality unit, has all the features that we want. You know, it's got the added benefit of having a rep close and a distributor close. They've already offered to, because of that close proximity, they've already offered to come on site and do training with us for no additional cost. And you know, we feel pretty good about it. It's coming in at $157,000. And Rochelle, correct my memory, but did we budget somewhere around $160,000 for this?
We budgeted $180,000.
We budgeted $180,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is, I really think that this would be a good asset to our equipment, and it's really going to make a big difference in the quantity and the quality and the safety of the work we do. So I would ask for the board to approve this purchase. Of course, if there's any questions, let me know. Leonard's probably might have a little more insight into some answering some questions, but I can do my best as well if there are any questions.
Tom, you had a question?
I have a couple. You mentioned that this was budgeted. I went over the budget, and I can't figure out where it was budgeted at. And now we're going into a new budget. Mm-hmm. So, and I see, you know, that it takes some lead time up to as much as 6 months to have one of these things built for us. Mm-hmm. I agree it's a great piece of equipment, and I can see the value of having it. However, I can't find where it's budgeted in this budget, but the next one I think we could, you know, certainly put that in there and just would order it on July, you know, July 1st, which is only a couple of months away, really.
Rochelle, can you answer Tom's question about where it is in the current budget?
Yes, if you look in the budget status under 004 and 005, it's going to be under rolling stock. I'm trying to get up there really quick.
What is it? Is it 005?
004 and 005. It's going to be split between the two because we can use it for water and sewer.
Each of those funds has $115,000 budgeted, so that's a total
correct.
Of $230,000.
Right.
How much of that didn't we just buy a truck?
We ordered a truck. We have not got the truck, so I have not paid for the truck. So, yes. The truck was budgeted in that as well. We budgeted, or I believe we approved $42,000. That's going to change. And most likely we are going to have to remotion that in July when hopefully the truck shows up.
Okay.
And I will roll that over into the next budget, is John and I's plan.
Okay.
So it is going to go over into the next budget. Correct?
Absolutely, yes.
The pickup truck would.
The pickup truck will. The back trailer, we have absolutely no problem paying for it this fiscal year if that is an option.
Okay, my question, or what I'm thinking here, this is a substantial amount of money.
It is.
And although I can really see the value in this piece of equipment, so I'm thinking, as I look at Dynavac, and I know it's that's basically 160 to 195, so that's $30,000 difference. But you also have twice the capacity that the Vermeer has, with the possibility of a few thousand dollars more in options. Like a hydraulic jack, the boom being a little longer option there, a couple of things like a toolbox, etc. But seeing how this is going to be a large purchase anyway, why not get the one that has double the capacity in both the debris tank as well as the water tank that goes with it? Do you think, John or Leonard, if you would ask, think about this a second, do you think that the savings difference and the closeness of the Vermeer folks offset the possibility of having double the capacity?
It does offset it. Number one, the other company would have to fly somebody out to do training on it, and any problems that may arise. The weight difference in the, we wouldn't have anything to be able to tow it, or people that were licensed to tow it if we had to use the dump truck. So it opens up a whole other avenue of cost. We don't need something so big and bulky that we can't have a place to store it, and it's almost easier to go with the less amount, the capacity. You know, this is stuff that, as far as debris goes from exposing water mains, sand, rock and stuff, we're going to have to dump. So we don't want to end up with huge mounds of dirt or having to find places to put spoils piles. So more is not always better in this case.
Thank you.
John, you wanted to add to that?
Well, I wanted to reinforce the tow weight, which is no small obstacle for us. I believe that that for our purposes, the tank size and the capacity of the Vermeer model is more than sufficient. And as it stands right now, we only have one truck in our fleet that could even tow that one. And unless, as Leonard alluded to, we got into the dump truck and then towed it with the dump truck. So we the weight issue is no small obstacle, and we need to keep that manageable.
Okay, thank you.
Cameron, did you have a question?
Yeah, as far as using it to pump out the step systems, is that the Vermeer truck, is that enough to do one pump out of the step system?
I would say in most cases it would be. I will say that we're not generally, although we do from time to time, we generally contract those out, just because we don't like to have to dispose of the septage at the headworks of the treatment plant. If we contract it out, that septage goes away and we don't have to worry about treating it. But I will say there are definitely times, emergency repairs and stuff, when we do have to pump those out. And I think that this this unit would do that very, very quickly and easily.
So you're not considering flipping out the step systems with this unit then?
Well, there are times we will. All I'm saying is, in general, it's our practice to contract that out so that we don't have to put too much high BOD septage and things like that at the headworks to the treatment plant.
So what is the cost for pumping out, like coming to pumping out one step system when we contract that out versus doing it possibly ourselves? I mean, is
Rochelle, did you have a
well comment? Recently, the last couple times we have had a contractor come out and pump it, it has been two septic tanks for about $1,200, which I think is extremely reasonable. And he hauls away all of the waste, and he's really comes whenever we call. We don't usually have to wait very long for him to get here either.
So that doesn't put a further tax on our wastewater treatment.
Yeah, I imagine if we had an emergency situation, we would probably pump it out ourselves, but thankfully we have not had that, so knock on wood.
But now, then if we do have to pump it out, where are we going to put it? I mean,
we would have to put it into the headworks of the treatment plant.
Do we have that availability then to be able to do that?
We can do it, and we can dump an occasional load of septage in there. But we don't. There's a reason. Like some treatment plants, they accept septage from other commercial haulers. I mean, we don't, and I'm glad we don't, because it can upset the treatment plant. It creates a very high demand, and I think if we were to get in the habit of pumping these and treating this septage ourselves, I think it would cause more trouble than the rather modest pumping fee we pay our current contractor.
Okay,
so this being an item for purchase as opposed to a contract with some possible flexibility. Oh, I'm sorry, Sean, you had a comment?
Yeah, thanks.
Question?
I just wanted to make sure the Vermeer quote seemed a lot less detailed than the other one, so I just want to make sure you guys are good with it and that it has both the Vactor and the other one. Sorry.
The Jetter,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we've looked at it pretty close. You know, it's amazing the variety of detail that you can get from different vendors. But although they didn't go into nearly the detail on the Vermeer quote, or Vermeer quote, we've done our homework and we know it's got the options and the capabilities that we want.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I think that may be all the questions. So we're at a point where we could entertain a motion for the purchase of one of these, and I think the motion, as opposed to the contract, the motion would be to approve the amount of the bid submitted for the item. So do I hear a motion?
I make a motion that I gotta find this again. I'll make the motion, but what was the final bid?
For the Vermeer?
Yes.
The Vermeer price was $157,364.73.
Well, as is our practice, we always fudge a little there. So I would make a motion that we accept their bid not to exceed $160,000.
Tom, I think in this case, because it's an item of equipment we're purchasing. Oh, Rochelle, did you have a something to add?
I would kind of agree with Tom, just because there's going to be licensing fees, luxury tax, and I don't know that there's going to be a transportation, but I don't think that they did licensing fees like license plates and stuff in that bid.
They did not.
So maybe they can make 165.
Just a little bit more.
Freight and prep does not include the licensing.
Right. Bid.
Well, I would say that the bid, it should, those kind of fees, I don't know how much they'd be, but I think the $3,000 fudge would probably cover it. So my motion would say up to $160,000.
Okay, do we have a second to that motion?
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded to purchase the Vermeer Vactor Jetter trailer equipment for an amount not to exceed $160,000. So all those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes unanimously. Thank you all, and thanks to John and Leonard for not only their input and Rochelle, but their careful analysis of what's available out there in the marketplace and their professional knowledge of the comparative equipment and what our needs are. So thanks, everybody. So item 7D, in-person board meetings.
Well, I'll take a stab at it. There was this came up at the last board meeting, and with the promise that we would put it on the agenda on this board meeting. I think probably everybody's got a different perspective about whether it's time to move this direction or not. I guess as anxious as I am to return to normalcy, in looking at, and I've got them here, in looking at some of the COVID statistics, I mean, much better than we've been in the past. I will say that what I see is Tillamook is still higher than a lot of places in the states. I would offer that in-person meetings also mean the possibility of the public attending the meeting in person, and I think we need to consider that. That's normally a good thing, but just coming off the Omicron variant, I'm hearing about cases still happening, and I think we would want to proceed cautiously. If it was just the board members, I think we could have plenty of spatial distance and all that, but with in-person meetings, I would ask everybody just to remember that increases the odds that we'll have members of the public wanting to attend in person. And are we at a place right now where we potentially think we could handle a meeting in our small conference room under those scenarios? And so I would ask for everybody else's thoughts on it, but I just want people to factor in more than just us as a group. It could mean a larger number of people in a relatively small room.
And as you mentioned, the statistics in Tillamook County, and Tom and then Sean, I think.
Well, I agree with most of what you said there, John. However, the time has come where we need to show our faces again. And the The concern is, I share similar concerns, and I agree with you that our conference room isn't big enough to do that. So I would suggest that we try to, for you're suggesting May 3rd would be the next meeting, to see if we can get access to the community center for that. And if they do have a speaker system there, or a PA system, it's I think it's personally kind of meager. But for this one time, as things change and we transition, we could probably borrow the Chamber's PA system, or even the Dory Association's PA system, for this first transition meeting, and that place is big enough that we can space tables so that however many of the public would like to come, and I certainly encourage that, that we try to do it with the community center, if at all possible, for May 3rd.
Sean, you had a comment or question?
I do, but I have a lot of things. So I don't know if maybe Cameron would want to go first before I occupy everybody's time.
Okay. Cameron?
Yeah, I'm in agreement that we need to do something. Also, I don't really feel comfortable with our conference room space of the way our setup is, our tables and stuff. I think we need to maybe configure a different design or something else. And to see if the community center is available for the next one, or if not, maybe they're at the post office, the church. I'm sure they allow meetings with donations for the use of their facility.
I'm sorry, Cameron. I couldn't quite hear what alternate facility you were suggesting.
They're at the post office, the Bible Church.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, they've got plenty of room, and it's a good parking, and everybody gets their mail and stuff picked up there. The community center is not available. But I do believe we need to change something in our facility for this, because I mean, I like you guys, but I don't, you know, I just got the bug from my wife from work, and I don't really want to get it again before my trip next month, so.
Well, that's certainly a consideration. Sean, do you want
to? So I do. So I'll try not to bore you with too many details, but I can assure you I've become quite the expert on this over the last couple of years, given my business. So I have a lot of thoughts and opinions, and I am of the general opinion that we need to get back to in-person meetings. I not only based on what I have seen locally, but what I've seen statewide, I have this really troubling sense that government has taken advantage of this situation to get a lot of things done that they wouldn't have dared to try to do when people were able to come to meetings in person. And that really doesn't have a reflection upon the PCJWSA, I don't believe. But outside of that, I think there's been a lot of examples of where things have happened at the government level that never would have happened before. So it's really important for me to get back to in-person meetings. Having said that, I don't see any way of doing it in our current situation. I don't see any way of doing it in the conference room. And quite frankly, I don't see that changing anytime soon. I cannot imagine a scenario where I will be comfortable to in-person meetings in that conference room for the next year. So I don't think this is just a one-month issue. I think this is a long-term issue that we need to address. And so just to kind of give you some idea, I had John give me the measurements of the conference room there. If you just take and Shannon and I spent a significant amount of time trying to come up with risk factors at Twist to try to keep our customers safe. And if you have any detailed questions about it, I'm happy to give you those kind of details. But what we kind of came up with was a proxy for a risk assessment, and it basically comes down to square feet per person. And the amount of square feet available in a room per person is kind of a good indicator of how safe it is. And everybody's been to Twist, and so to give you an idea, if every bar stool at Twist was occupied, we'd have about 50 square feet per person. If you take into factor the 6-foot rule that the CDC had for a long time, where you needed to be 6 feet away from somebody for 15 minutes or less in order to have to self-quarantine, that gives you about 28 square feet per person. And I went back and I looked at the number of guests that we had in the conference room during 2019 during our board meetings. And at our most dense pack, that dropped it down to about 11 square feet per person. So I just do not envision a way that our conference room in the next year or two as we come out of this COVID thing is going to be anywhere near safe. So I would suggest that we take a look at booking the community center, or perhaps I like Cameron's suggestion of the Bible Church. Let's look at this as sort of a semi-medium/long-term scenario where I think we're going to have to move our board meetings to the community center for the foreseeable future. And so let's start, if everybody is on board with it, let's start looking at to see if there's a way that we can start booking the community center every second Tuesday for the next year and get those on the books, because I just don't see any way of us doing this if we want to return back to in-person meetings, which obviously that's my opinion and maybe not everybody's opinion, but I think we need to start looking at booking that community center out for a long time, because I think getting back to in-person meetings in the conference room at the PCJWSA is going to be a long-term prospect.
I agree, Sean. I think the workshops, I think we can get away with that when it's a group of us in the budget. But it's, what is the square footage of that conference room, John?
Well, Sean probably knows better than I do. He did the math, so I gave him the measurements.
I can tell you, yeah, give me one sec here. It was not a whole lot. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
I think it was around 600 square feet.
That sounds about right.
All right.
I lost it. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Hang on. No, I lied. It's 300 square feet.
300 square feet.
So we're going to have a budget committee meeting too, which will involve more people. And last year we did that on a video conference call, and it worked pretty well, I thought, as far as the discussion going ahead and getting the job done. And I think a lot of people have gotten pretty comfortable with these things. I guess I'm a little reluctant to make the move for May, only because I think we've got a couple of different options as possibilities out there, and we haven't really fleshed out the details of either one of them yet. The other thing that gives me a little pause or takes it off of the more urgent table for me is that we have had, and I will ask Rochelle if this is still true for this meeting, absolutely zero public comments or questions presented at the monthly business meeting. So I don't feel the imperative to move forward right this second to public meetings. And I guess my preference would be to give us some time to do some research on the logistics of the two locations and make a decision about that in May when we've got some more information in front of us, because I do agree that the conference room seems pretty close company for safety's sake. And we also don't know where the B2 variant strain is going to go. The contamination of that is picking up quite rapidly in a lot of places. We don't know, and we won't know until time passes, whether that's going to be the case here or not. The thing that always concerns me about our community is not so much the people living here. We have statistics on the percentage of people in Tillamook County that are vaccinated with one dose or two doses or all three, including the booster. But what we don't have statistics on and is impossible to tell is the status, health status and vaccination status of all of the visitors that come and visit us. For now we've gotten through spring break and we're moving into summer. So that aspect is a big unknown that gives me pause a little bit too right now. And Sean, I really appreciate the research that you've done and you and Shannon have done, because I think the figures you're talking about are very useful in planning for when we do go to public meetings. So, Tom, yeah.
Well, I appreciate your concerns. I have similar concerns, but just penciling out, moving back to our conference room, just penciling out 300 square feet at using Sean's 28 square foot per person, that comes down to 10.7 people in our conference room. So obviously, he's absolutely right. We can't use that for anything more than a workshop or a board or a small meeting of some sort. However, I disagree with you about looking at other options right now. I would like to see us use that May 3rd meeting, if at all possible, at the community center, and at least try. If that is not possible for this coming May meeting, we can find that out via email to each of us, and I think that we could just research it a little more at that point, and and do the regular May, in this case, the May 3rd meeting with a video conference again. However, if we can book the community center for May 3rd, I think we ought to do it.
The other factor, Tom, that we're missing here is Carolyn's input, which I think is valuable. It's a shame she couldn't join us tonight, but I do think her input is important. And as I recall, when we made the decision to change our meetings from the first Tuesday of the month to the second Tuesday of the month, we delayed that decision because Director Gogas wasn't at the meeting where we initially discussed that. So,
good point.
So I think it might be reasonable to look into the possibilities. Maybe Rochelle or Shamra could look into the availability of rooms for, say, June or July, something like that, so that we get some data, so we have some information and know what might be possible. And then we'll have another month's worth of experience with this new variant that's flying around, and maybe make a decision or discuss this again at the May meeting. Does that seem reasonable?
That seems reasonable, although I'd sure like to see next May as the first one. But
I agree. We're going to be having budgets starting next month. Mm-hmm. When's our first budget meeting coming up, Rochelle?
May 17th will be the budget committee meeting.
Yeah, and like I said, again, I think it would be important for us to have Carolyn's input as we think through this
discussion.
Well, like
We could have Rochelle call, like that's what happened when I missed and I put my input in then. But I agree. I think we should see if the availability is for either one of the, there at the post office or the community center, and see if Carolyn's up for that. If not, then her input. But I'd like to go forward in May. I don't know about Sean, but it sounds like it. And Tom.
Sean?
Yeah, I'd like to add one more thing. I'm sorry I had it in my notes and I didn't mention it before. Tom and Cameron, I agree with you. I really want to get back to in-person meetings. But one of the things that I remember in the past, and I apologize for not mentioning it earlier, you know, when we have meetings at the PCJWSA, that's our property. So when it comes down to kind of security issues, we have some control over that facility because it's our property and we're the board. When we start moving meetings to offsite locations, that changes that dynamic a little bit. So the community center isn't our property. We're not the governing body for it. So when it kind of comes to security protocols and things like that, that's not under our purview. So I would say maybe as much as I want to get back to in-person meetings, maybe let's see if staff can look at booking that out for June. And I think it might be worth just checking in with legal counsel on security issues and procedures and things like that when we're talking about making a move from having our meetings on a site that we have control over to a site that we don't have control over.
That's a good point. Cameron?
Yeah, I've thought about it. What would I do if there was a situation? I would just, myself, I would get up and leave. I don't think any board meeting is worth getting into a conflict with anybody. Just for your information, if something comes up and it's not in our facility, I'm going to get up and leave for my safety. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I just, in my mind, I'm thinking, what, you know, let's just hypothetically say, what happens if we have an unruly guest that's getting out of control? It's a lot easier for us to make a decision based on that, given that that person is on our property in a board meeting that we're controlling in a facility that we control, versus doing that at another facility where, you know, this particular board doesn't have any jurisdiction over the facility that we're at. So that's kind of what I'm going through in my head in regards to that. And so I think it just might be worth floating that question by legal.
So I think I'm hearing a consensus to keep exploring, to explore the KCC possibility and the Pacific Coast Bible Church facility as a possibility, to consult on the security issue, perhaps with our legal advisors, and to look at the availability of those buildings maybe for June, tentatively, but to make a final decision on this at the May meeting when we assume that Carolyn will be here. And so is that, have I phrased that? Everybody wants to get back to public meetings. It's just a matter of how and when, and we want to do it safely and for everybody's sake.
So Rochelle's going to check into the availability of those facilities then?
I will check into the availability for June. We do have two meetings in June, so that'll be a perfect opportunity.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. That was a good discussion, and I think we sort of mirrored the rest of the world in struggling to make these decisions as we go along, and especially in a situation where conditions change weekly and maybe not daily at the moment, but at least weekly and certainly monthly. We really don't know what's coming down the pike, and I think we have to stay aware of the issues and have these kinds of good discussions, but also we have to be prepared to stay the course or make some changes if we jointly feel that's appropriate. So
well,
that was a good discussion.
Well,
so
the rule, and we're going to eventually have to expand our conference room.
So, well, that will be for another agenda.
Yeah. I mean,
so, item B on the agenda is guest questions and comments. Did we have any guest questions and comments for show?
We did not.
We did not. Okay. Number 9 on the agenda, chair and director comments. Cameron.
Good. I'm just, looking at the unaccounted water loss of that. John, with your thoughts on that, hopefully with this new apparatus that we're getting, that will help possibly find that some of the issues. My concern is, what happens if that leak is underneath the river, the Horn Creek crossover? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, John, if the possibility of that being how we would tackle that?
Well, I would say that I think that's probably, considering it's our newest pipeline, I would say it's probably very unlikely. You know, we've got a lot of older pipelines in town that I do know are prone to water leakage. But I would have to say I'd be highly surprised if we had any issue at all with that 12-inch transmission line. It's just not old enough, and I think that would be. What you're referring to would be a real outside probability.
Okay. Any other director comments or questions? Sean? I'm sorry, I can't quite see your hand unless I see it moving up. It's kind of a little bit out of the field of view here, so
yeah,
sorry.
There's a glare.
Right light there. So a couple of things. One, I think in general, we ought not to assume that the way things are going with Zoom calls would be the way things are going with in-person meetings. I think we're in a whole new dynamic, and so I think that I would guess that if given a safe environment, that our community would start coming back to meetings if they were in-person versus online. I hate Zoom meetings. And Teams meetings and all this stuff. So, and I know I'm not alone. So my guess is that'll come back once we create a safe environment. And then the other thing I just want to say is, you know, we've had some of these discussions today, but especially as we head into next month with potentially John talking to us about water rights in Horn Creek, you know, we're about to start getting into the era where we're going to have some pretty big expenses coming up. So I just want to throw out there that I think that we need to start thinking about having some discussions with our community about where we're going, where our expenses are, and how we're going to pay for them. I think there's a lot of money sitting out there in that water master plan. My guess is there's a lot of expense coming up in the wastewater master plan, although not as much as before since we've already constructed the wastewater treatment plant. But, you know, we're potentially talking about $30, $40 million worth of expenses that we have coming up. And a big one is going to hit if we have to expand Horn Creek and put in another skid there. So as we move into these potentially in-person meetings, I think it's a great opportunity to start having discussions with our community about how we're going to pay for this stuff. Because we've got some big dollar items coming up, and those big dollar items don't fit neatly into the working capital that we have on the books right now. And so I think we can kind of combine two things together. We can start having some discussions about how we're going to pay for this, and we can start having some discussions about how we interact with the community. And I think both of those things can kind of parallel together and tie back on each other as we start looking into having in-person meetings again.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Sean. And it is rare that people, the community at large, focuses on such things as master plans. And so I have always been a fan of having a large public meeting to really selling the concept of the public coming to that meeting to hear what a master plan is, that it's over 20-year period, that is the job of the board and the authority to look ahead and plan ahead for these things, not just in terms of equipment and facilities, but also in terms of the financing. So I think it's those are going to be a great opportunity, and I think, as we talked about it before, we agreed that we would not do a large public meeting like that until we had both master plans completed so that we could address both of them. And because there's some real big picture issues there, and it's going to take a lot of conversation with the public to walk through those steps and what it means, not just financially, but for the health and safety of the facilities and the processing of water and wastewater. So, yeah, I think it's a good opportunity, too. Yeah, Tom?
Concerning Sean's comments, another thing, when we talk about master plans and bringing it to the public and large ticket items, that sort of thing, it's been my experience that one of the most divisive scenarios, that's not the right word, topic with our community has been the priorities of what we're going to be doing in the next year, 2-3 years, and especially about maintenance of our system, our pipes and that sort of thing, the water loss, that sort of thing. But most importantly, presenting that master plan, it's always been, even referring to the last update we had, that was before my time as a director, that was often discussed in our meetings, was the priorities moving forward, because everybody seems to have different priorities. And I agree, we have to get there. So that's all I have.
That's great. And it is a constant struggle as far as timing goes, because just when you think you've got a great program all laid out, then the lift station, the airport lift station gets flooded and the electrical panel goes kablooey, and that's a technical term. And then you're into a whole new project that you didn't even conceive of on the master plan. So we have to remember that accidents or whatever term you might want to use happen, and that we do have to deal with those as they occur. So the master plan is a plan. It's not a work order. So, and I think it's important to keep that distinction alive. So, do we have any other director comments or questions?
Oh, I've got
hearing
one.
None. Oh, I'm sorry, Cameron.
Yeah, I've got one. I'm a little kind of distraught about our agreement with the forestry property, that we haven't been keeping up to date with the project on that. John and I talked a little bit about that. I feel like we dropped the ball. I wasn't aware of it, because I believe that was before my time, Tom's time. But I would like to see us get caught up on some of that stuff. I think it's important, because that's, what, a 25-year deal, and I think we're behind the eight behind. I really feel bad. I don't like to see that we've neglected something. And if there's something else, we're falling behind in, let's get caught up. And in community involvement, I know there was a lot of talk about replacing lines, that the community has really been thinking about that. So I'm sure there's a lot of input they'd like to see. And I think back to open meetings,
Yeah,
the biggie. So.
Agreed. I think we have a full staff now, and we're on solid footing with our staff and our leadership, and I think that some of those, maybe if there was a hiccup, things happen, and I think we're in a different place now than we were a couple of years ago. So with that, hearing no other comments. What?
Sean?
I'm good.
Oh, Sean, I'm sorry.
No, I'm good.
Okay. So we will adjourn the meeting at 6:49 p.m. And thank you all. To be continued.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodness, that was enough.